And we're holding on page Chof Gimel in Sanhedrin, or is Memches. The Gemara talks about like this. When you have a case in Dine Nefoshes in particular, well, in general, any case that's in front of Beis Din, they have Sofrei Dayanim. They have court reporters who write down what's going on in the Din Torah. Now, we're at one point, and it discusses, in the case of Dine Nefoshes, you have at least two, one to write down Divrei HaMezakin, the opinions of the ones who want to exonerate the guy, the opinions of the guy who wants to make him guilty, according to one Tanner. There's a third one, there's a cross check on both of them. In any case, the point is that you have one of the rules by Dine Nefoshes, different than Dine Momenes, is when one of the Dayanim has argued in favor of the guy's acquittal, then he can't then change his mind and start saying, you know what, I changed my mind and I think actually we should convict the guy. So therefore we have the Sofer HaDayanim to be able to, that they can refer to the court records to see which one had said what. When it comes to Gemar Din, then they can. When it comes to Gemar Din, they can decide to vote differently than they had argued all along, but that's different. Yeah. But when it comes to deliberations, then not. But anyway, so one point is also that the Gemara talks about is that these Sofer Dayanim, they have to write down not only what each of the Dayanim says that his opinion is going to be, but also his reasoning behind it. So now the Gemara talks about that you can have a case, for example, where two Dayanim derive from two different psukim that he should be guilty for the same reason. Now that's a problem, the Gemara says, because as we're going to say over here now, there's nothing redundant in the Torah, so there wouldn't be two psukim that teach us the exact same thing. It has to be that there's a reason why each of them is for its own thing, and if each of the day, and if two dayanim, therefore, are both saying on the basis of two different psukim that this gives us a reason to declare the guy guilty, then we know one of them is making a mistake. And therefore we can count it, therefore the Gemara says, in effect, therefore we can count those two dayanim as only one. So the Gemara brings in the following piece. The pasuk says, "Achas Dibur Alekim." Now the Gemara, by the way, goes on to point out after this piece over here, after this piece of Agadah, the Gemara goes on to point out there are a number of places where we seem to see have different Tanoim learning the same din from different psukim, but in fact, each one of them, the Gemara points out, there is some nakdamina between them. Which pasuk we derive it from?
The question: during the deliberation, he can't change his mind.
But then the Gemara again, he could change his mind. Because during the deliberation, one said that's the Gemara, I think, learns it from psukim, but that's, yeah. And when it comes to the verdict, he can say, you know what, after all, I realized that what I was arguing for all this time is incorrect, and I want to change my mind. Fine, but, yeah, even to convict him, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara brings, the pasuk says, Achas Dibur Alekim Shtayim Zu Shamati, the Gemara. Hashem has spoken one thing, and I heard two. So what does that mean? There's many different drushas on it. Among other things, it means the one statement that Hashem said by Matan Torah, from which we have Anochi and Lo Yilecha. But here the Gemara says one meaning of it is Mikra Echad Yoshel Kamatayim. One pasuk can go and be used to teach many different things. So there's no problem with that you should have different chachamim, different tanoim or amuroim or whatever, learning from one pasuk, learning different dinim. No problem with that. Ve'in tam echad yotzei mishtei u'mikama mikrois, but you're not going to have one reason, one explanation that comes out from two different pasukim. So Rashi brings over here, for example, that the Gemara gives an example further on about the din of shchutei chutz. A person is not allowed to shecht or offer karbonis outside of his mikdash. If he is, he's chayav kares. So how do we know that if a person sprinkles blood, then he would be subject to that? So Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva both agree to the din, but they learn it from different psukim. And the Gemara goes on to say that there must be some nafkamina between them. Otherwise, we would have to say that one of them is wrong, because you can't have two psukim that are teaching us the exact same thing. So now, the same thing, in other words, that it must be, if two dayonim are doing it, then it must be one of them is making a mistake. So in other words, the idea is, achas dibur alekim, shtayim zushamati, but not the reverse. You don't say, shtayim dibur alekim, achas zushamati, that Hashem should say two things, and we derive from it only one. It wouldn't work that way, because that would mean there's something redundant in Torah.
It's not
what?
There is maybe something like that, that they are repeating themselves to...
But always we have. There's some reason why it's repeating it, and we learn some drosha from it. The Marashah points out, the end of the Pasuk continues, Ki oiz lay lekim, meaning that Hashem has that power and that chokhma to be able to say one thing, and we derive many different things from it which are all equally true. As opposed to a person doesn't have that ability to be able to do that, to be able to speak in such a way that from which you can derive so many things. No, it can also be three. It can also be however, yeah. It was saying Stein Yishamati, at least two. It could be more than two, yeah. And you have examples of that. I mean, one example is you have, for example, later in the Masechta, it talks about the Pasuk Lo Yisochel Al Adam, which the Gemara learns half a dozen different dinim from that. Don't eat from the meat while the animal is still moving around, and don't eat from the korban before the blood is sprinkled, and don't eat like a ben soda or a murder, and so on. Don't eat before you daven, and so on and so forth, and there's a whole bunch of different things. So all of those are valid. So, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, ironically, here we have this very point that you don't learn two things from the same pasuk is itself learned in the Gemara here from two different pasukim. We have one where the Tanakhama brings from this pasuk, Achav Dibur Elokim, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a different source for this concept. The pasuk says, Fatish, the pasuk begins, Halaychoi Dvori Ko'esh Ne'um Hashem, Hashem says, aren't my words like fire, Och Fatish Yifoitzit Sola, and like the hammer shatters rock. So, Ma Patish Zemes, Chalak Lakam and Nitzotzis, so just like the hammer breaks up into many sparks, Ach Nikra Echon, Yotz Lakam Atayman, the same way one pasuk you can get many different reasons, many different understandings, and many different pshatim, and then explanations on different levels of Torah from the pasuk, and all of them are valid. What do we mean, Chafakish Yifoitz at Solas? A Tosfos over here, and a couple of other places in Shas where this pasuk is brought in different contexts, Tosfos talks about a couple of meanings. It can mean like the hammer shatters the rock and causes the rock itself to break up into many fragments. It can mean the other way around. Tosfos brings from a medrash that, for example, Sanpurinu, and sapphire, the material the luchos were made out of, is an extremely hard stone. Ad kedekach, that there was an example, somebody once tried it on his workbench and tried to break it with a hammer, and the hammer broke rather than the stone. So the hammer itself can break up into many fragments. And then there are Rishonim who learn what it means is that when the hammer strikes on the rock, sparks of fire fly off from the rock in all different directions. So therefore we see that it is valid to have many different understandings from the same pasuk, but not to have that different psukim should give us the exact same understanding. So that's the thing. Tosfos points out, Chafatish Yifoitzit Sola sounds like it means the Patish is the object which breaks the Sela, but Tosfos points out, on the other hand, you have Psukim that are, for example, you have a positive Tosfos refers, for example, a positive. But the one problem with it is that you have, in some places, for example, the Gemara says that the Gemara brings this positive about the Yetzirah, Shlep him to the Beis Medrash, and Pogam Acham Menuvelzeh, Moshcheu the Beis Medrash, and the expression is, in Barzel whom Yifoitzit. If he's iron, he'll shatter from the force of the Torah. So the question is, if a Chafatish Yifoitzit Sala means the hammer shatters the rock, then it should be comparing the Yetzer Hara to the rock, not to the hammer. So that's why Tosfos brings that it can mean that the rock causes the hammer to shatter when it bangs on it. And Tosfos points out, for example, you have a Pasuk, Avonim Shochaku Mayim, you have a Pasuk in Iyad. Translated literally, you would say it means stones wear down water, but that's not how it works. Water wears down stones, so it means that vonim, the stones, shachakul mayim, water has worn them down. So the same way, chafatish yifoitzit sala can mean the hammer which the rock shatters. Somehow Shaw talks about over here that another meaning of all of this, by the way, is the word sela doesn't just have to mean a rock. We know in Gemara terminology, sela is also a coin, which is also made out of metal. So in places where we talk about this pasuk, so again, here we're talking about it in connection with the Torah being compared with the comparison to Torah, and in other places it compares to the Yetzer Hara. So that's Marashah points out that a person has a tzura, a person has an ideal form to him, just like a coin has a tzura, just like a sela coin has a tzura on it. So now what you have is you can have those coins that have been withdrawn from circulation. They're no longer considered legal tender because, for example, the old king whose picture was on them was overthrown or whatever. And then you have the current circulating ones of the current king. So what do you do with the old ones? You take the hammer and you bang on it and you flatten it out. So now you can make a new image on it. So therefore, so he talks about that represents, in other words, the person was in a bad way. He has the melech zaken uksil b'yetzahara. So now he has to bang on himself with the hammer and transform himself and use the fire of the Torah to melt himself down into a new kind of coin. And then he goes on to talk about then that's why the Torah is being compared over here to both fire and a hammer and why again in other places you have where it compares the Yetzirah to the fire, why it compares the Yetzirah to the stone, to the rock and to the hammer and so forth. So it all goes into this. There's an interesting, there's a Rashi Sikha, I think, in the Chedek Chavvav, I think, where the Rebbe talks about there's a place in Parshas Va'era, where at the beginning, where Rashi brings over there the Pshat of the Psukim over there, and then he says the Drosha, about the Chaval of the Abdin, and then Rashi says over there about Drosha Kidorish, the Drosha has to be Darshan, and he brings this, Haloi Kodvori Ka'eshno, Mashem Chafati Shifoitit Sala, Meschalik Lacham, and it's Tzotzis, and the Rebbe has a long, interesting explanation over there that it means that there you have a unique kind of thing. The Rebbe explains, sometimes you have, Rashi will bring Pshat, and then Rashi will bring also a Medrash. Why? Even though Rashi is here for Pshutash HaMikra, because there's something lacking in the Pshat, there's something unsatisfied in the Pasuk, and therefore you need to resort to a Medrash. Here the Rebbe says you have something unique, where the Pshat itself suggests to us that there's something missing, and that you need, therefore you need the Medrash. So it's like the hammer striking the stone over here, and sparks flying off in all directions, the same way as you hear one spark flies in the direction of Pshat, and another spark from the same thing flies in the direction of Medrash. There's an interesting thing also, there's an interesting explanation from the Nitziv on all of this. He said the comparison to a rock being shattered into pieces and also the sparks of fire, is the sparks themselves. You think about it, some sparks go out right away, others of them will kindle a new fire. So he says the same way, for example, you have Tamid Chachamim are sitting and talking in Torah. Sometimes you'll have, for example, a Hava Amina comes up momentarily and then it's immediately shlugged up. So that's like the spark that right away goes out. There's no kiyum to it. And then on the other hand, for example, you have opinions of Tanoim, of Amoroim, of Rishonim, or whatever, which in the end we don't accept the halacha, but nevertheless they're recorded for us, and we learn them, and we learn horos from them, and so on and so forth. So those are like the sparks that actually kindle a whole nother fire. Next, Piska Dinin Afashis Dunin by Yom Mechula. Another distinction the Mishnah mentions between Dinin Mamonis and Dinin Afashis is all of them have to be judged by day. But the difference is, the Mishnah says that Dinin Mamonis, you can do the actual arguments and everything by day, and then Beis Din can give the verdict at night. But the Dinin Afashis, you have to have both the discussion and the verdict, all of those have to be done by day. Not even that day, the Gemara mentions, and we'll have in the next paragraph over here, they have to leave it overnight and only do it the next day, but in any case, all of it has to be done by day. So the Gemara says, Minahani, merely where do we know that from? So Amar Shimon bar Chiya, Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes right, at the end of Parshas Balak, when you have the Jewish people, the Jewish men have gotten involved with Bnos Midian, so Amar Kra, V'hoika oisam l'Hashem neged HaShemesh. So Hashem tells Moshe, kachat to Rosh Ha'am, take all the leaders of the people, V'hoika oisam l'Hashem neged HaShemesh, and hang them up. Because of Hashem, in other words, because they violated Hashem's mitzvahs, in front of the sun. So in front of the sun means by day. So therefore we see that Dinin Nefashos, the whole procedure has to be done by day. Rashi mentions on the Pasuk from the Medrash that it was literally in front of the sun, because wherever there was one of the Chotim was there, the Ananiah covered would fold away, and you'd have a beam of light from the sun penetrate through, and therefore that would automatically show who's guilty, but nevertheless, they had to have a Din Torah, and they had to have Bote Dinim judge each one of them, and condemn the guilty ones, and it says neged hashamash. When it says, by the way, tachas kol rosh ha'am, there is an opinion in the Medrash that it means to actually take the rosh ha'am themselves and hang them, because hoyol v'yonim limchos, they could have protested, and they didn't, but the other explanation, which is what Rashi brings on the Pasuk, it means tachas kol rosh ha'am, bring the rosh ha'am and set them up as ad hoc bote dinim to judge all these people who've been guilty, and then v'hoy ka'oisam, and then hang them, the guilty ones, l'ashem neged hashamash. Okay, so what does hoika mean? Amr of Chistim, inayin lahoika shi'itliya. How do we know that this word hoika means to hang them? So d'chtiv, you have the story in Sefer Shmuel, you have the story with the Givonim over there. There's been a famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years. David tries to find out what's going on. He asks the Ramatumim. He's told because Shaul mistreated the Givonim, where we know when he killed the Kohenim of Noiv, the Givonim lost their Parnasa. The Medrash says some of them were also killed in the crossfire. Anyway, David goes to them, and the other upshot is they were Achzorim, and they demanded that seven of Shaul's descendants be given over to them to be killed. And the Pasuk says, what are they going to do with them? For he canu Hashem, give us Shaul b'chir Hashem. We are going to hoikanu, same church as hoika, to Hashem in the on the hill of Shaul, the chosen one of Hashem. The Gemara mentioned, by the way, of course, the Givonim, they hate Shaul. They're not going to call him b'chir Hashem. When they said Shaul, a bas kol rang out and said b'chir Hashem. This is not just Shaul. You're talking about this is Shaul that had been chosen by Hashem as king. In any case, now we still don't know from that what hoikanu means. But uchtiv, the pasuk says a few psukim later. Now, the Pasuk describes who were these seven. Two of them were the sons of Rizpah Bas Aya, who was a Pilegish of Shaul. So the Pasuk says, Vatikach Rizpah Bas Aya as a sack, the same Rizpah Bas Aya, took a sack, Vatatehu Loyal Atsur, and she inclined it, she made like a lean-to of it, by the rock, Mitzchilas Kotzer, is how it actually says in the Pasuk, from the beginning of the harvest season until rain fell. The Chazal explained, there's a Gemara on this in Yevamos, there's Midrashim on it, that they were hanged during Pesach time. They were hanged the second day of Pesach, which is the beginning of the harvest season, and their bodies remained on the gallows for about 7 months until Tishrei time, until Cheshvan time, the rainy season. Rashi points out from the Gemara in Yevamos, usually you have a mitzvah to bury somebody right away, like Solomon of Los Alates. In this case, they made a David told them to make a unique exception and leave the bodies hanging there all that time, and this way it made an enormous Kiddush Hashem. People pass by and they ask what's going on over here, and they tell them these are princes, these are sons of Shaul who were killed because of the Givonim, these low down hangers onto the Jewish people who were harmed by Shaul, and everybody realized from that to respect the Jewish people. Look how the Jewish people treat even their lowliest Gerim. The Gemara says, or like 150,000 Goyim from the surrounding nations became Gerim as a result of this. So it made an enormous Kiddush Hashem. So for that, David said that for that we can override temporarily the mitzvah of the Torah, like Solomon of Los Alates. In any case, the point is that since it says she took a sack, the point is that the Pasuk is saying over there she used that to help protect the bodies. The bodies are hanging out there in the open. She didn't want the wild animals or the birds or whatnot to get to them, so she covered them with a sack and was standing watch over them by night and by day. It comes out from the psukim, and Chazal make it clear she like barely slept during all those 7 months. She's like a standing guard, a one woman guard, as much as possible the whole time to keep any animals or birds or whatever at bay from the bodies. Well, for one thing, two of the ones who were killed were her own sons. So one point is also she was matzik alei asadin. She didn't complain of anything. She accepted the Eibishter's judgment, and now she's going to do what she can to be shomer on the bodies. So with their sin themselves, I don't know if it says specifically. I mean, again, the Givonim demanded that they be killed, and that's the only way they're going to be appeased. And then rain will fall. I think one point is that they were taka involved in that massacre at Noiv when all the Kohenim were killed, that they were involved in it. That they helped out, or that they were there and they didn't protest, whatever it is exactly, yeah. In any case, the point is that the fact that it describes that she had to use a sack to cover them and protect them shows they were in the open, and therefore we understand that for hoika is a kind of execution where the bodies are out in the open, namely hanging. So from that we see that vahoikanu means hanging, and in turn then when it says vahoika oisam in Parshas Balak, then it means that they should be hanged. Okay. Now, getting back to the Pasuk in Parshas Balak, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Kachas Kol Roshei Am, take all the leaders of the people, Vahoika Oisam, and hang them, Vagomer. So you have to ask, on the face of it, yeah, the Pasuk makes it sound like they're hanging the leaders. Im Ha'am Chotu Roshei Am Machotu. The people may have sinned, the Roshei Am, what did they do wrong that they deserve to be hanged? So again, there is an opinion in the Medrash that is exactly what it means. But here, the Gemara says differently. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, no, it means Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, means Hashem is telling Moshe, Chalek Aleihem Batei Dinim, divide up the leaders of the people and set up many ad hoc Batei Dinim. Because you don't want to have that there's many people who've been involved in worshipping Baal Pa'ur over here. You don't want to do it, you can't judge them all at once, as we're going to go on to say. But on the other hand, we need the whole matter to be taken care of as fast as possible, because there's already a magefa has broken out. We need to save as many Jewish lives as possible. So the only way will be that we're going to have many batei dinim simultaneously, each based din of 23, judging each one of the accused. So the Gemara says, my time, we'll talk about why. Is it just because you can't judge two people on the same day? You have to have based and has to give their full attention to every defendant, because they need to have as much as possible, that they should look for ways to exonerate him and so forth. So you can't have like mass justice like that. Well, the problem with that is, that applies only when the cases involve two different misses. So, or two different avedas. Each one is different, and each one, then you need them to look into and find the appropriate psukim and the appropriate drushas and so forth. So they might not delve into it quickly enough because they have a whole bunch in front of them. Avo the misa achas donin. But if it's all one misa and one aveda, then they could judge a whole bunch of people at once, because all the reasons that they're going to find, all the psukim and all the mamore chazal and everything, are all going to be the same for each one of them. So they could conceivably then have taken a bunch of these people at a time and had them all be judged by one based in. Why don't they do that? Ella, no, the reason is... what? Like an Ernie Dachas, actually, it mentions at the end of the Sefta, they actually do. They actually do set up a bunch of ad hoc Batidinim to judge the people one by one. Yeah. So, but over here, the Gemara says, Ella, Kadesh Yoshev, Charon, Afmi Yisrael. No, the reason is because since there's already Hashem's anger and there's a plague raging, so Moshe says, let's make as many Batidinim as possible, show that as many of the leaders are involved in this to try to make the thing stop, to get rid of the guilty ones as fast as possible, and that way Hashem's anger will turn away from the Jewish people. In other words, if it was only one based in of 23 or 71 or whatever that's dealing with the matter, that's not going to turn away Hashem's anger. Fine, so you're going to have one based in is dealing with it. You have a whole bunch of people who acted badly, and now you're going to have, but when where's everybody else? They're sitting around. So like this, when you have many Batidinim taking care of the matter, one next to the other, then it shows as like a demonstrates to Hashem, look how many people are concerned about this and making sure to take steps about it, and that itself will take away Hashem's anger. I'll bet like you have, you don't just want to have a few people who are doing mitzvahs, b'roivam hadras nalach kind of thing. The more people who are, not even b'roivam, because that's when you have many people together in one shul or one base medrash or whatever, but even let's say, for example, a couple of bacharim that go out here and there on mitzvahim. You have a whole groups of, each one goes to their own place, and that way it demonstrates to the Eidosh that there are many people who are oisik in this at the same time. I'm going to join each party to each based in the practice 23. The Derech Klal, talked about at the beginning of the Sefer. You have 3 for Dinei Mominus, 23 for Dinei Nefashos, and 71 for the Sanhedrin.
What could
22,000
or something?
21.
How many people were killed?
How many people were killed? It actually doesn't say. In the plague, 24,000 died, but that's in the plague. We're not talking about the ones who were executed by Beis Din. There is actually, the expression in the Pasuk is, Hugu ish anoshav, each of you kill his men. So there is some place where it says that it means that each, I think Rashi brings it on the Pasuk actually, that each of the Dayanim was responsible for killing two people. Now, since as we know from the Pesukim, in Parashas Yisro, there were like 78,000 Dayanim or so. The Gemara makes the calculation at the end of the first parak of Amos Sefta, because you had 600 Sarei Alafim and then 12,000 Sarei Chamishim and so forth. So it comes out the total number is like 80,000 or so. So it comes out like 150 or 160,000 people would have been executed. Does that mean that at Taka how many were executed? Or does it mean that maybe they would have all been, except that then at that point Pinchas killed Zimri and the plague was over and they didn't have to, and then have to execute all these people? We don't know, really.
People were giving
Masorah. People were Pashas, they had to be aided Masorah for every one of them, yeah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah says another distinction between Dinei Mominus and Dinei Nefashos. Dinei Mominus, Gomrim Boiba Yoim Ben Leschus Ben Lechoiva. With Dinei Mominus, they can finish and give the verdict on the same day, whether the verdict is that the guy is. That the guy is innocent and doesn't have to pay, or whether he's liable and he has to pay. Dinei Nefashos, when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, then it's different. If the verdict is going to be, if the vote is going to be to acquit him, then they can finish it on that same day. But if it's going to be a verdict of guilty, they have to wait till the next day. They have to sleep on it overnight. The mission goes on to describe what they would do is the Dayanim would pair up into pairs, and they would go and talk it over together among themselves during that night. Or sometimes, not in pairs, but sometimes the Dayan would just go home and think it over by himself. And then the next morning, they'd reassemble and give the verdict. So the Gemara says, Menahani, really, where do we know that from? The Pasuk says, the Novi talks about how wonderful Yerushalayim used to be and how it is in his times. It's an Aftarah of Shabbos Chazon. Meleasi Mishpat. He says Yerushalayim used to be full of justice. Tzedek Yolinva, righteousness would stay overnight in it. But now there are murderers. So in other words, Rashi teaches out what the what was saying is that they would be meilanus hadin. They would leave the case overnight in order to have another chance for tzedek, in order to have another chance to declare the guy tzadik bedinoi and exonerate him and let him go free. Now they're not doing that anymore. Yeshaya complains, and therefore va'atamaratzkim. So now, in effect, they're murderers. In other words, we're not talking about they're going and murdering in cold blood, but we're talking about they're not taking that extra care with dinin nefashis. They're just giving off the verdict on the same day, and therefore it's called maratzkim. So we see that they have to leave it overnight. The word meleasi mishpat, by the way, Rashi, I think, brings on the pasuk, but in it's Maim Chazal someplace, that there were 481 batidin in Yerushalayim at that time. The word meleasi is gematria 481. V'rova ama mehacha. There's also a musa de divorce that they say on this, sometimes criticizing people's skewed sense of priority. Tzedek yolinbo. When it comes to tzedakah, people say, I need to sleep on it overnight. I need to consider whether I need to do it. But va'ata, but when it comes to meratzkin, va'ata, we got to do it right now. So, yeah. Okay. V'rova oma mehacha. Rova says there's a different source for this concept that you have to leave it overnight. Also in this Nevuah of Yeshaya, he says, Ashru Chomitz. He says, Ashru, the simple meaning of Ashru Chomitz is Ashru, is strengthened, like Yisha Koichacha, Chomitz, the one who's been wronged. So we learn from it also, Ashru Dayan, Shema Chomitz is Dinah. Happy and fortunate is the Dayan who makes the din chometz, like you leave dough overnight and it becomes chometz, so like he leaves the din overnight and thinks about it overnight, so he has another chance to exonerate the guy. And come out with the truth. The idach. Now why doesn't Rav Chanina want to learn from there? Because he says there's a different thing we learn from that pasuk. Ashrei chometz v'loy chometz. It means you have to strengthen the one who was wronged and not the one who caused the wrong. Which means, in other words, Rashi says the Gemara in Bava Kamma tells us that when you have a din Torah, so you have both sides want to present their arguments. Which one gets to present his arguments first? Generally speaking, the Gemara says, Niskokin la tevea tchila, we first want to hear the arguments of the plaintiff, the one who brought the din Torah. So we learn that from the word Ashru Chomitz. You want to strengthen, he's claiming that he's Chomitz, that he's been wronged in financially, so therefore you need to strengthen him and hear what he has to say first. The Gemara discusses over there are certain rare cases where you do hear from the Tevea first. There's a shach on that as well in Choshen Mishpat. There's an interesting sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning of it in terms of our avoda and in terms of our war with the Yetzirah. Generally speaking, the skok and the Tevea Tchila, usually the Yetzirah gets his first say, but sometimes you have a person who's on a higher level of avoda, have no time to waste on the Yetzirah and his arguments. Zili nichse, the Gemara calls it, like his nechosim are losing in value. The Shach talks about a particular case where such a thing could happen. So like the guy's saying, I have nechosim of Torah and mitzvahs that I have to be occupied and I haven't got time to waste on the Yetzirah and his nonsense. So then we don't listen to the Yetzirah first, then the Yetzer Tov, the Nefesh Elokis, gets his first say. In any case, so Rav Chanina says, that's what we learn from that pasuk, Ashru Chomitz, so we can't use it for Rava's drosha about Ashrei Dayan Shemachametz Dinoi. Okay. Speaking of this pasuk, Tzedek Yolin Bavat Meratz, in the Gemara brings, Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Kol Tainis Shemalinin Bat Tzedakah, any Tainis Tzibur, where they leave overnight the Tzedakah, it's supposed to be on the day on a day of a tainus tzibur, they would give tzedakah out to the aniyim. In particular, right on the night after the tainus, and Rashi points out the aniyim are looking forward to that. So if they leave it overnight and they don't give it to them, then it comes out they're leaving the poor people hungry because they were depending on it. So ke'ilu shofech damim, it's like they're spilling blood. Shenema, as the pasuk says, tzedek yolin bav after meratzkim. If you leave over the tzedek in it, then now they're meratzkim. So that's another meaning, another dimension of meaning in the pasuk. That you have to give the tzedakah right away on the day of the tainus. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, Agrid's tanisa tzedakah, the main reward that people get for fasting on a tainus is the tzedakah they give on that day. One point is, the Gemara tells us elsewhere that when you're fasting, you're supposed to have in mind, the fact that I lost my flesh, that I lost some of my fat and some of my blood from the fasting should be considered like a korban, so therefore it has to go together with you increasing the fat and the blood of the aniyim by giving them their tzedakah. The Maharal talks about this over here. So the Gemara says, "V'hani mid the beriska over tamri." Now that only applies to the bread or the dates that they would be giving to the poor people in a place where they regularly give those things out. So those are things that are ready to eat. So the aniyim are looking forward to that. That's what they're going to break their fast on. So now, if you don't give it to them, then they're very disappointed and they're going hungry. Aval zuzi, but when it comes to money, they can't eat money. They're anyway going to need to go to the store and buy something with it. The chiti of sairi, or wheat or wheat and barley, which again they're not going to eat as is. They're anyway going to have to do a whole bunch of processing on it to turn it into bread. So they're anyway not depending on that to break the fast. Less than bus, so there's no problem if they delay it and give it to them the next morning because they weren't depending on that so much anyway.
Even if they give them the food the night before, they're not eating it then during the fast.
No, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about as the fast is ending, then you give it to them so that they can break their fast on it. But if the local minhag is that you give them money or wheat or barley, then there's no problem if you delay that till tomorrow morning, because anyway, that's not what they were depending on to break their fast anyhow. But bread or dates, things that are ready to eat like that, then they're expecting to have that to break their fast, and therefore if it's not given, then it's like shreifel dummy. Further on, the Gemara talks about another distinction that the Mishnah mentions between dinim mominus and dinim nefashis is by dinim mominus you start the vote. By dinim mominus you say first the gadol sheba dayanim, the abbeistin or whoever says his opinion, and then all the other dayanim follow, and then all the other dayanim one after the other give their opinions, and then we have the vote. When it comes to dinin nefashis, on the other hand, the Gemara says, maschilim menatzad, you have to start from the least important members, and then from the junior members, and then work your way up. Further on, we'll have soon a piece where the Gemara explains a pasuk where we see that concept from, but so the Gemara mentions in this connection, Omar Rab, anoha voy b'minyona dvei Rebbe. I was one time a voting member of the Beis Din of Rebbe. Now, you have in Gittin, the Gemara tells about, the Mishnah tells about a takana called Sikrikun. There were various times in Jewish history when there were Goyisha, when there were extortionists, mafia types or whatever, who were forcing Jews. They were blackmailing Jews and threatening them, you either, Jewish landowners, you either give me your field or I'm going to kill you. So the Jew would have no choice but to give his field to the Goy. Meanwhile, later on, another Yid may go and buy that field from the Goy. So the Mishnah talks about there was a takana of the Chachamim of what to do about it, how much he has to compensate the original owner, and the Gemara mentions, the Gemara goes on to mention that there were several different takanas about this in different times. That Mishnah, by the way, mentions that there was a din of sikrikun, did not apply by Rugi Mohammed in the time when Jews were being killed during the war before the Churban. That's where the Gemara goes into the whole sugya of the Churban is there in Gittin in connection with that Mishnah. In any case, the Gemara goes on to say that at one point, Rebbe and his Beis Din made a takana on this topic. That if you see that there's a different din, if this is Goyish mafia guy has held onto the land for 12 months, then there's different dinim that are involved. So, like any takanas chachamim, they have to vote on it. So Rav says, "Anoha voy b'minyona devei Rebbe." I was one of the voting members of that Beis Din of Rebbe when they were voting on this takana. Uminodidi habu maski liberesha. They started with me. I was the first member of the Beis Din to vote. So the Gemara asks, "Anan maslumen agadol tnan?" Doesn't it say in the Mishnah that by dinim mominus you start from the greatest? So shouldn't Rebbe have been the first one to cast his vote, and then we would work our way down to the Talmidim, eventually to Rav? So the answer is Omer Rabba Breda Rabba. So Rabba, the son of Rabba, says V'itemer of Hillel Breda Valas, or others said of Hillel Breda Valas says Valas is a name. Anyway, Shiny Minyona de Bei Rebbe. It's different with the votes that were done in the Yeshiva in the Beis Din of Rebbe. The Kulam in Yanayim and Atzad Habu Maskli. They started all of them from the side. They started all of them from the junior members and worked their way up to Rebbe. Why? Rashi says, because Rebbe was a tremendous onog. So he didn't want to vote first ahead of all the other chachamim on his Beis Din. So therefore he would have them vote in the opposite order, even by dinei mominus, and work their way up to him. Doris Rishonim gives a different logic for it. He says, first of all, in Rebbe's time they didn't have Dinin Nefashis anymore. They didn't have Dinin Nefashis since the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas Agazis, which was well over 100 years before Rebbe's times. So now it's all Dinin Mominus anyway. But he says, we're not talking about it here. This isn't regular Dinin Mominus, after all. This is a Takana that they're making for all time, or until at least another Beis Din supersedes it with their own Takana. So therefore, that's different. When we say Dinin Mominus, when we're saying Dinin Mominus, you start from the center, you start from the Beistin, that's what we're talking about. A regular dinim omenus, Reuven comes with a claim against Shimon. Here, when we're talking about Rebbe's Beistin, we're busy making takonis for the future of the Jewish people, then those in fact start Menatzahan. So the Gemara is having mentioned Rabba Breid Rava or Rabbi Hillel Breid Rabbi Valas about the Rebbe, so the Gemara digresses to mention another thing that those Chachamim said. Omer Rabba Breid Rava, the Tamer Rabbi Hillel Breid Rabbi Valas, mi most Moshe v'ad Rebbe, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of Rebbe, lo matzinu Torah ugdula b'makom echad. We never find that the same person had Torah, was the top level Tamid Chacham of the Jewish people, and also Gdula, that he had the greatest power over the Jewish people. So Moshe had that. Moshe was, of course, the teacher of the entire Jewish people, and he was also the supreme leader of the Jewish people in war and in peace. From Moshe's times until Rebbe, we never find such a thing again. So the Gemara asks, V'loi, V'ahav Yeshua. What about Yeshua? Wasn't he the greatest Talmud Chacham and also the leader? And the answer is no, because Hava Elazar. Because in his times, there was also Elazar. So therefore, so Elazar was equal to Yeshua in knowledge of Torah. So you can't say that Yeshua was undisputedly had the top level of Torah. As opposed to Moshe, didn't have any peer, and was saying neither did Rebbe. So the question is, well, I have a Pinchas. What about in the next generation there was Pinchas? And the answer is, have a Skenim. In his times, there were the Skenim who were equal on equal level as him. Rashi points out, you have the various Shoftim. Some of them, not all the Shoftim, were great Tamar Chachamim, but some of them, Osniel, Ivson, also known as Boyaz, were top level Tamar Chachamim, and they were equal in caliber to Pinchas. So you can't say that Pinchas had exclusively Torah Gdolah B'Makom Echad. Some of them, not all the Shoftim, no, the Shoftim were not Nevi'im, but some of them were great Tamar Chachamim, such as Othniel ben Knaz, who was one of the towering Tamar Chachamim of his times. Some of them were not. Some of them we have, for example, we say Yiftach Bedorda to Shmuel Bedorda, so Yiftach was not necessarily such a Tamar Chacham, and neither were some of the other ones, but some of them, Rashi points out, some of the Skenim, some of the Shoftim, were indeed tremendously great Tamar Chachamim of the caliber of Pinchas. So therefore, you can't say that Pinchas or they would have the exclusive Torah, the exclusive heights of Torah in that generation. This Gemara is also in Gittin, Taka, in connection with that Takana. The Gemara brings over there, what about after Yeshua passed away? There's Elazar, and the answer is Elazar had Pinchas, who was his equal. And here we're saying Pinchas himself had the Skenim as his equal. Okay, the Gemara says, well, I have a Shoal. What about in a later time there was Shoal, who obviously had Gdullah, he was the king, and he was also the greatest Talmud Chacham of his time? The answer is, have a Shmuel. Yeah, there was also Shmuel, who was equal to him in Torah. So the Gemara says, or if not greater. So the Gemara says, well, not actually. But Shmuel passed away a couple of months before Shoal. The answer is fine, but Kol Shnei Kamrinin. We want to look for somebody who had Torah, Gdullah, Makom Echad throughout his entire period of leadership. Shoal did not, because fine, at the end, the last few months of the leadership, you could say that he had exclusive Torah Ugdullah, but he didn't have that for his entire kingship. Okay, the Gemara says, well, have a David. Fine, next you have David. The answer is, have a Ira HaYairi. In his times, there was Ira HaYairi, who the Pasuk says that he was a Koyan LeDavid, which the Gemara explains in Moed Katan, he was David's Rebbe. So therefore, so you don't have, David is not the exclusive top-level Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara asks about Noch Nafshe. Ira passed away before David. And again, the answer is Kol Shnei Kamrinin. We want somebody who had Torah Gdolah B'Makom Echad throughout his entire tenure, and David didn't have that. For that matter, Marsha points out in Gittin. You also have the Gemara could have also mentioned. You have Mephibosheth, who was also a Rebbe of David's. Next. But I have a Shloima. What about Shloima in his times? The answer is, have a Shimi ben Gera. And at the beginning of his reign, there was Shimi ben Gera, who was in fact Shloima's Rebbe. And he himself was a distinguished Talmud Chacham. Rashi points out that when David came back after Avshalom's revolt failed, then Shimi, who had previously cursed David and everything, he came to greet David at the head of a delegation of 1,000 people, which shows that he was a Talmud Chacham who had 1,000 Talmudim. So he was a very distinguished Talmud Chacham. But again, the answer is so therefore, you have Shimi ben Gera, who was equal to Shloima. The Gemara says, well, Katlai, but we find that Shloima actually had Shimi executed. A long story, but the gist of it is that Shimi ended up disobeying a direct order of Shloima, and anybody who disobeys an order from the king of the Murid B'Malchus and his Chayim Nissa, David, and in fact told Shloima that I'm not going to kill him myself, because I promised I'm not going to, but you'll already figure out a way to dispose of him, because you realize that he's this kind of guy. He cursed me in public and everything. You realize that he's not going to be so loyal to the Malfoys.
He said he
greeted him in all. So, yeah, David said the fact is you can still see that he's a chutzpanyak type of guy. So, fine, I didn't kill him at the time. The Gemara mentions it's a good thing he didn't. Otherwise, Mordechai wouldn't have descended from him. But the fact is, David says, the fact is he still needs a kapara in this world so he doesn't go to Gehenna. And he's a dangerous kind of guy to have around. So, David tells him, Yadaita is a shakasa law. You already figure out what to do with him. So, the pasuk says that Shlomo gives Shimi instructions. He tells him you have to stay in Yerushalayim. You're never allowed to leave the city again. A couple of years pass, Shimi leaves the city, and Shlomo finds out, and he was a murdered by Malchus. He says you were murdered by Malchus, and therefore you have to be executed. So the Gemara says, but again, Kulushnei Kaminin, we want somebody who had Torah Gilav Makam Echad throughout his entire career of leadership. And again, Shlomo didn't have that because he had Shimi Ben Gera those first couple of years. Well, I'll have a Chizkiah. What about in a later time, you have Chizkiyahu, who, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, he worked very hard to raise the level of Torah learning among the Jewish people, and we learned before that he had 110,000 Talmidim. The answer is Habashevna. Yeah, but at the same time, there was Shevna, who we said had even greater. We said he had 130,000 Talmidim. Again, the Gemara says, well, Ichtil, but he was eventually killed, as we had before the story of how he tried to surrender to Sanhedrin and then wound up getting locked out of the city and getting dragged around by horses and all that. And again, Kolishnei Kaminin, we want somebody who has leadership from the beginning, who has Toto Gula Makmachad from the beginning. So, Tosfos points out that it is taka a little odd. For example, the Gemara could have asked about Yeshua that Osniel ben Knaz was in his time. Why didn't it mention that? Tosfos also mentions that there are versions of the Gemara that don't ask the question about Chizkiah at all, because Chizkiah didn't rule over the whole Jewish people. In his times, the Aseret HaShevatim were taken into Golus. Besides which, we learned before, Shevna was a Rosha. Why would he be in the category over here anyway? But then, in fact, for that reason, when we talk about David, we don't mention Achitofel. Here's what Tosfos actually mentions about Mephibosheth. Marsha and Gittin explains that it's one thing. In other words, for example, in Rebbe's times also, of course, the Aseret HaShevatim was still in Golus, but fine, of the Jewish people who existed in his times, Rebbe was the undisputed leader. In Chizkiah's times, the Aseret HaShevatim, and actually long ago, they rebelled against Malchus Beis David, and now they went into Golus, still in that state of rebellion, and therefore Tosfos is pointing out that maybe Chizkiah doesn't belong in this list over here. And the Gemara asked Vahav Ezra, and the answer is Havin Nechemi ben Chachalia, Nechemi ben Chachalia, who was his equal in Torah. As far as a couple of them, by the way, Ben Yehoyada points out, we're running out of time, but Ben Yehoyada points out, why did the Gemara ask again and again the question where we know the answer is going to be Kol Shnei Kamin, and we know that it's going to be throughout his life? Once it asked about Shaul and Shmuel, why is it asking the same thing about David and Irahi, and again about Shlomo and Shimi ben Gera and Chizkiah and Shevna? And he explains, because each of them is a chiddush over the previous one. Shmuel, Mela, fine. Shaul outlived him only by a couple of months. So you could say that's not considered Toto Gilam Mochamacha just for a couple of months. But David and Irah Ya'iri, it was many years. And nevertheless, the answer is that the answer is still not. What about with Shlomo and Shimi ben Gera? You could argue he was killed as a murdered by Malchus. Maybe that shouldn't count at all. Nevertheless, it counts. You can say Chizkiah and Shevna. Maybe Shevna shouldn't count at all because, like Tosfos is saying, he was a Rasha. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying he counts. So the result is Yitaka don't have, from Moshe until Rebbe, Yitaka don't have Toto Gilab Makam Echad. And we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with another example of that in later generations. Who chronicled all of this? Well, so we said, Rabbi Breda Rabba, or Rabbi Hillel Breda Ravalis, says this statement. Rabbi Hillel Breda Ravalis, we find in some places in the Gemara, was a contemporary of Rebbe. So that's the thing the Gemara is saying. Well, it went through, but this is every possible candidate we've eliminated. Yeah. What? Aaron is not mentioned, because of course he and Moshe are equals in. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Yud Aleph Sivan. Of course, the Rebbe was talking in a sicha, as he always did, about Lehavi Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Poyo Mamesh. So how do we accomplish this avodah? So also, B'Pashtos, Hosofa in Torah and Mitzvahs, in Limud HaTorah, to learn Nigla de Torah and Pnimis HaTorah, and keeping Mitzvahs B'Hidur, especially Azman Groma. This was a sicha, Parshas Shemini, Nun Aleph. So right after Pesach, the Inyan of Azman Groma, to keep the Minag, of continuing to learn Pirkei Avos after Mincha throughout all the Shabbosim, first during the Shabbosim of Sfira, and after that during the rest of the Shabbosim of the entire summer until Shabbos Mevorchim Tishrei. So in other words, the point is, we shouldn't just think Pirkei Avos, we just dabbing it up. The point is that Eber's saying over here, this is actually part of the Avodah of bringing the Gula Amidus Vashlema. Okay, continuing with halachas tzitzis, we were talking about that, for example, if you have, you took off tzitzis off one beged, and one of the tzitzis is short, one of the strings is shorter than it should be, in which case you can't tie them yet on another beged. But we said if now you take another string and tie it to that one to make it proper length, then that's fine, the Alter Rebbe continues. But medvar amamurim, that would be when you tie this extra piece on before you start putting the strings into the beged. But after that, if you put them onto the beged, and then one of the strings tore, and it's less than kedayan nivra, it's too short to be considered a valid string, like we learned in an Udi or Simen, then it doesn't help by tying another piece to it, because the tzitzis are already possible, and then the only thing that, the only way to make it kosher would be when you're actually making the tzitzis to begin with. So if you take them off the tzitzis, and then you tie a string onto it, and retie them to the beged, then fine. Otherwise, again, tassel, I mean, also, you're making something that was already made, you're not doing a mice over here for the actual making of the tzitzis, and therefore that's no good. So again, we talked about before, if one string is, as long as it's kedeya niva, as long as it's long enough to be able to make a knot of it, to make a bow knot of it, we learned before, Rabbi Ram Chaim Nod defines that as being about a little less than 2 inches, then you're still fine. But below that, then already that string doesn't count. And we learned before, the Alter Rebbe had pointed out in an earlier sin in different opinions about in how many strings can be broken and it's still valid. And then Lamaisa, we all know, we learn as kids that if one string is broken, then you're still fine. But if two strings are broken, then you may have a problem unless you took care when you were making your tzitzis v'chol v'chol, as we learned about then.